From Welcome Villain Films, the studio that brought you the horror hit Malum, as well as Beaten to Death and Hunter Killer, comes their newest nightmare, Mind, Body, Spirit, now available on digital. Directed by Alex Haynes and Matthew Miranda, and produced by Dan Asma, Mind, Body, Spirit follows Anya, an aspiring yoga influencer, as she embarks on a ritual practice left behind by her estranged grandmother. What starts as a spiritual self-help guide quickly evolves into something much more sinister, as Anya becomes increasingly obsessed with the mysterious power of the practice. She unwittingly unleashes an otherworldly entity that begins to take control of her life and her videos. Now, Anya must race to unlock the truth before her descent into madness threatens to consume her mind, body, and spirit. During its festival tour, with stops at Chattanooga Film Festival and the Unnamed Footage Festival, Mind, Body, Spirit garnered praise from critics who call it a found footage version of Hereditary and a knockout found footage horror movie for the live stream era. Experience the first ever yoga-themed found footage horror film, and don't miss the film viewers have called extremely frightening and upsetting. Available now on digital anywhere you rent or buy movies online, including Prime Video and Apple Plus.
And welcome back to Little Cuts, our mini-sode where we dig into the things that we've been watching recently. I'm Terry.
I'm Mary Beth, and if you're watching this on video, I have a sick, nasty Lisa Frankenstein Letterman's jacket I got in the mail.
Yeah, you do.
And I've never felt cooler in my life. And that's it. I don't know. I'm just wearing it like a dork.
That's badass. It's out on VOD now.
Yes. Anyway, but this week... sorry, I got distracted by my own jacket. Nice I burped my own jacket. Obviously, my Vyvanse has worn off. But this week, we are chatting about Peach Fuzz, an intense interactive piece of art, time-traveling found footage, fascist propaganda, late nights with Satan himself, and burning down the world for love.
So we have a very full house today. But before we get there, I have to ask Mary Beth, have you eaten some rhubarb today? Have you cried for candy? Are you wearing blue and yellow?
Oh, God. Oh, God. I only know about this because someone in my, like, my one of my friends said that. And me and Steve were like, what in the fuck is going on?
Do you not celebrate Leap Day William?
I don't celebrate Leap Day William. I'm so sorry.
He comes from the Mariana Trench once every 4 years to
give that children candy. I love that he
they
comes
made
from
a movie
Mariana
about
Trench.
Him with Jim Carrey in it. He becomes Leap Day Williams.
Is it Williams or William?
It's Leap Day William, but the movie is called Leap Day Williams.
Wow.
So if you haven't guessed, listeners, we are recording this on Leap Day. And as the obsessed 30 Rock fan that I am, I have to bring it up. You gotta cry for candy.
Leap Day William caused my internet to crash.
Yeah, it did.
Leap Day William infected my computer.
Yeah.
But yeah, did you say we're doing 30 Rock series?
Oh, no,
Rock.
I haven't.
Oh!
But surprise, so starting next week, we're sort of leaping to the end of the episode, shall I say? We're going to start a series on 30 Rock coming up with the next Little Cuts, because I will not rest until the world is as much in love with the show as I am. So
we've been doing a lot of bleak shit, so we might as well do something a little bit fun and easier to watch.
So I'm going to be introducing Mary Beth and y'all to my favorite episodes. So we're not covering the entire show, but I am going to be throwing out my favorite episodes that across all the seasons. And I'm very excited for it. But more on that at the end of the episode. I'm excited because I know that you have seen the sequel is what I'm guessing you're talking about. I want to talk about Peach Fuzz, please and thank you.
So, I finally watched Creep 2.
And isn't it so good?
It's so fucking good. So this was on my, like, the bucket, my, you know, 2024 movie bucket list that I'm not doing great on right now, but that's okay. February was a weird month for several reasons. Uh-huh. But finally watched Creep 2. And let me fucking tell you. Masterpiece.
Better than the first one.
I agree. It is better than the first one. Because, so, okay. Creep 2. We have Mark Duplass back as our boy. And then Desiree Akhavan plays Sarah. Hold on a second. Let me just triple check because I'm really bad with character names. Yeah. So Desiree Akhavan plays, and she directed The Miseducation of Cameron Post. But in this movie, she plays Sarah, who is she's trying to be a blogger. She is basically meeting weirdos online from Craigslist and trying to make a web show out of it. It's not going well. Lo and behold, she stumbles upon our beautiful boy, Aaron, who is like, come film me for a day. And then she's like, she gets there and all it becomes this like super weird psychological mindfuck of a movie that is everything I've ever wanted. And like a woman having a lot of having all of the power and wielding the camera and seeing the world from her perspective. Because this is something I've been thinking about a lot for something I am writing that has not been announced, but something I was writing. And for the first time, I've really thought about how in the Blair Witch Project, like, that entire movie is told from a woman's perspective. Like, there are a couple times where the guys have the camera, but, like, for the most part, it is a woman's perspective. And a lot of movies don't do, like, a lot of found footage movies haven't done that. Like, they'll be about a woman, but they won't have her actually in her shoes, which actually, weirdly enough, we'll talk about with another movie I watched this week / last week. But, like, she has all of the power with him. And I love it when, like, he tries to jump out and scare her, and she just, like, scares him right back. And it's just, like, this weird, toxic mess, and it's incredible the way that it, like, unfolds. It's such an incredible flip in the power dynamics from the first one.
Yes.
Especially in regards to gender. Like, this is the kind of movie I wish more people were making. Like, it's weird and fucked up, and you're like, what? Do I feel bad for the serial killer? Like, what is going on here? And I love that. Like, it just... I don't know. I feel like an idiot that I haven't seen this sooner. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm surprised that you haven't seen it sooner because...
I know!
Because it, like, ticks all of your boxes. You know? And what I love is how it subverts expectations from the first one, because unlike the first one, he's met his match in her, in my opinion.
And it's absolutely. She's like,
I love that dynamic.
But there's this incredible moment where she's like, guys say weird shit to me all the time. Like, he's gotta be, like, there's no way he's telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And like, the whole time, it's like this very fascinating thing of like, she's a woman and she has experienced, like, she knows how weird dudes can be, regardless of if they're serial killers or not. So she's like, I'm just gonna call your fucking bluff. Like, I have been said, so many weird things have been said to me, like, you can't faze me. And I love that, because then you don't really know if she's into it or if she's just like playing games with him. And I need to watch it like 45 more times.
Good.
But yeah, it's so good. And it's on Netflix, which is cool.
Oh, is it? Okay. That's right. It is. I knew that.
On Netflix. Yeah. So. Erotic.
Yeah, it is. It really is. It plays with that really well. And from what I remember, it's been a long time since I've seen this, but from what I remember, like, we don't see nudity from her, but we see him, like, stripped down completely, right? Is that right?
Yeah, we see his penis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's fully, like, full frontal nudity, but we don't see her at all.
Yeah. It's interesting.
So good.
I really wanted to make a third one.
Oh my god,
but
I know.
But I want them to take their time. Like, I want it to not be just like, we're making a third one. I want it to be, like, as good as this one was to the first one. You know what I mean?
I know. Yeah. We'll see. I want to hear about an intense, interactive piece of art.
Okay, so speaking of things that tick all the boxes and yet we still have not experienced until just recently, I finally sat down, also weirdly enough from the same year as Creep 2, I sat down to play Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice.
Okay.
Have you played this or are you aware of it?
I know. I've watched Steve play it.
This game destroyed me in like ways I was not expecting. I played it in one go. I played the entire thing.
Wait, really?
Yes. I think it took me about 6-ish hours to beat. And I was like, it was last Saturday. And I'm like, you know what? It's 11 a.m. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to play this game because I'm really excited for the sequel. And I was like, I really need something that is like just a interesting game that's going to grab my attention and keep me going. And so I played this game. And Senua's Sacrifice is about this woman named Senua, set in like a dark fantasy world that's inspired by Norse mythology. And she suffers from psychosis. But because it is that time frame, she doesn't know what it is that she's dealing with. So she calls it her furies of her voices that she keeps hearing. And she is being haunted by an entity that she calls the darkness. And so we're in her head the entire time as we see her struggling to basically, you don't initially know why, you know that she has a head of someone strapped to her, her backside. And she is on a quest to do something to potentially bring this person back is her hope. And the voices in her head, the furies are, you know, either egging her on or telling her that she's no good. Like it is constant. And if you are wearing headphones, it is almost like a weird, creepy ASMR just in your ears.
Ooh.
Of like voices whispering at you. And it does a really good job with like the direction that the voices are coming from. And so it's always there, and it plays into the gameplay a little bit because they kind of give you some hints about what to do, because this is a game that does not have any HUD. It does not have any UIs. It does not tell you anything. You have to listen to the voices and pick up on your own and learn. Also, as she is playing, she gets infected with this rot, and you are told almost immediately that if you die too many times, the game is over. And you loot, and she is lost forever. And so it adds to this sort of like,
I forgot about that.
It adds sort of like this Dark Souls or like really, you know, intense bit about like, you don't want to die and you want to do everything perfectly. And it's this emotional story. And let me tell you, there is a boss fight in here that is the most intense boss fight I've ever played in my entire life, where the lights go out. And some of it is done almost in like that sort of, it's not night vision, but it's sort of like where everything's in grays. Do you know what, I don't know what it's called, but it's like shades of gray. Almost like echolocation, kind of, in some ways that is portrayed. But like this giant creature is stalking you, and you have to listen to the sound of its growls, and because there's no light, and it is so fucking intense. But this game is heartbreaking. And what I love about it is that the developers of this game worked with neuroscientists, mental health specialists, and people living with psychosis to sort of tackle this in a very empathetic way, and also sort of use it not as like the horror that the character thinks it is, because she thinks she's cursed. Her father was a religious zealot who was telling her that she is, you know, an evil person because of this, the voices that she hears. And so we're dealing with sort of the stigma of it as she is trying to progress for such a tender story and the tender reason why she is doing this. And I don't know, it blew me away, and I am so angry that I waited this long to finally play it. So good.
There's a new one coming out this year, right?
There is. That's why I was like, you know what, I'm gonna play it, because I'm very excited for the sequel.
Yeah, I remember being really into the mechanics and being really interested with how it plays with mechanics and how it's a game that like really is in discussion with mental health and actually like really does put you in the shoes of someone struggling with a mental illness, but like in a fantasy setting.
Yeah.
I think that's really, really cool and really smart. And they did it in such like an understanding way, which I remember, again, like, just being, like, really, really impressed by that when Steve was playing about, and, like, how beautiful it is, but also
it's
just, like...
It's stunning.
She is not well, and they do a really good job about, like, showing how, like, kind of not well she is without making her seem, like, weak or scary. Right. I think they hit that balance really well with, like, showing physical manifestations of, like, mental illness, but not, again, demonizing it.
Right, and while there is, like, this core... theme that is coming through with, like, her trying to resurrect the person that she has the head of, it's also a story that is really about self-acceptance and coming to terms with the fact. It kind of reminded me a little bit of the ending of spoiler alert for Hypochondriac, but it reminded me of the ending of Hypochondriac, where she's not going to ever cure, quote unquote, what is plaguing her, but the idea of living with it and the idea of looking at it as not the curse that her father does. And so there's, like, a lot of heavy themes, and it's done so tenderly. And it's just, I don't know. I was blown away. I was very emotional by the time I ended it. And I think that if you have 6 hours to play, like, it seems like a long time, but people binge shows for a whole, you know, a whole season and a weekend. But I think that if you have the time to sit down and play from start to end in one sitting, it is an emotional gut punch of a game that just, it blew me away. It is unlike anything I've ever experienced.
I'm so sorry. Hey, get down. Get off the table. Hey, little asshole, get off. Anyway.
Cats.
But yeah, I'm excited to hear about how the new one is. And yeah, it's only 6 hours? It's only
It took me about 6 hours to beat, yeah.
I don't remember it being that short.
Yeah.
Cool.
6 or 7, somewhere around there.
Okay. Hold on, she's about to... Stop it. Sorry, she's about to knock over, like, an entire, like, box of posters. And it was about to be a fucking problem. But cool, sorry. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So that was a Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice, and I'm sure later, I think it comes out in May, so I'll be talking about the sequel down the line, because I'm not going to make the same mistake and wait, 7 years? 8 years? Jesus.
Oh, time is a cruel mistress.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's awful.
Anyway.
But yeah.
Let's, speaking of time, I want to hear about time traveling found footage.
Amazing. So, I had not heard of this movie, and I was, like, kind of shocked that I hadn't before. This is a movie called Lola, directed by Andrew Legg, L-E-G-G-E, I believe it's Legg. But this movie is essentially a woman piecing together footage of her and her sister, documenting their experience with a machine called Lola, which can intercept and read radio transmissions from the future, and then it projects it, and they can see the future. And it takes place in England in the 30s, and so they basically try to use Lola. They end up using Lola to help with the war.
Okay.
And then things kind of go sideways, and, you know, like, in a lot of these time travel dramas, it kind of talks about, like, what happens when you play with time too much. But it's all done on 16mm film, and it's all it's almost entirely done on film with both archival footage and footage that they shot on, like, vintage Bolex cameras. Wow. And so it's period piece found footage, which, like, we don't get a lot. That's difficult to find. And it's one of the sisters putting together, like, a record of what they did as sisters and kind of what happened with Lola. And these two women, Thomasina and Martha. Thomasina is basically a mad scientist. She's a mad scientist character who, like, helped build this machine and, like, has all of these, like, big aspirations for how to use it. And then she has her sister. And they've lived in this house all alone for their whole lives. And they're these kind of, like, feral weirdos, but also really cool. And it is just a really fascinating way to do found footage. And also, it's a movie told entirely from the perspective of women. And even though a man directed it, the woman who plays Martha actually shot all of the footage that Yeah. And they let her just go with it. So, like, even though he's the director, like, it's seeing it, we're seeing the world from their perspective, and even specifically Stephanie Martini, who plays Martha, she shot a third of the movie.
Dang.
Yeah, so it's on pre-order from Severin, the Blu-ray, because it did some festivals, but I didn't, like, really hear anything about it.
Yeah, I played a Fright Fest.
Yeah. But, like, I don't know, it just, like, hasn't really made, like, a big splash in a lot of places yet. And I was really surprised with, like, they built the machine, and it looks like a machine, like a cool time machine. Like, they did it, they had someone, like, do a custom glass blowing for them for parts. And they basically also bring in, like, cultural artifacts from, like, the 60s into the 30s. And it's really interesting, like, meshing of the future with the past. Like, one of the sisters uses, like, Bob Dylan's music and becomes a popular singer because she's singing Bob Dylan's music. Like, it's just, like, a really interesting look at time-traveling movies.
Wow.
And, like, doing it, like, taking the things you expect, but doing it in a really interesting way, in a really interesting mesh of context. So I highly recommend it. I really, really liked it. Again, centered on women seeing the world from a woman's perspective. Like, actually, she is holding the camera, so you are literally seeing, like, from her perspective. And I just want to help spread the word, because it's quite amazing in what it is doing and how it is done. So that is Lola.
I do remember, now that, like, you're describing it, I do remember seeing this, like, come out in terms of festivals, like Fright Fest and whatnot. I didn't realize it was found footage, and I just wrote it off as, like, a wartime time travel movie and didn't really think anything of it, but
yeah,
you made it sound really interesting. I might have to go check that out. It looks like it's streaming on Peacock.
Yeah, it's on Peacock. It's also on Tubi.
Okay,
so it's free for everyone. And if you want the Blu-ray, it's there. It is pre-orders are up on Severin. So.
Bless Severin.
Bless Severin. So, highly recommend if you want. If you're a found footage freak, highly recommend. Actually, weirdly connected, because talking about World War II, fascist propaganda?
Yes. And, you know, there probably is a little bit more connection to in terms of, like, the war aspect of it. So, Helldivers 2 has come out, and, like, I this isn't about Helldivers 2, which is a video game, but that conversation but people have been talking about it, and then because of that, the discussion on social media has included what is probably a reference point for that game. I rewatched for the first time in Jesus, who knows how many years, at least 24, probably more, Starship Troopers. Which,
it's such a good movie.
Bless.
There's been a lot of Helldivers in our house. That's why I was.
Has there been? Okay.
There's been a lot of it in my home. There's been a lot of yelling. Hearing a lot about democracy floating from the living room sometimes. A lot of yelling about democracy.
Yes, I think some of my gaming friends are gonna play. So. I think some of my gaming friends are going to play, so I'm probably going to be giving it a try. But the whole talk about it, and the fact that I got a new soundbar that has Dolby Atmos in it, and the Blu-ray has Dolby Atmos, I was like, I'm gonna give it a test out and rewatch Starship Troopers
on that giant fucking TV. You're like, I am in Starship Troopers,
and boy howdy was I. So for those who have never seen Starship Troopers, it takes place in the future in a fascist, militaristic world where we're at war with giant alien bugs that we call, confusingly enough, arachnids, even though they don't have eight legs and arachnids aren't bugs.
But they don't really look like them, and they also, like, don't look like arachnids. But
no, thank God. And we follow, you know, young recruits that end up getting pulled into the propaganda of war and then end up going through...
Denise Richards!
Ugh, Denise Richards, who I think was just hired to smile, because that's all I feel like she does in this, is smile.
Oh, yeah, absolutely all she does in this is smile.
And we have Casper Van Dien, who's only in here to cut things with his very chiseled jaw. We have Jake Busey, who's here to just be a Busey.
Like, Neil Patrick Harris looking like an actual Nazi.
Like an actual Nazi.
Like, literally a Nazi. Just without...
Clancy Brown being a drill instructor.
Wait, Michael Ironside's in it too, right?
Michael Ironside being the teacher that is, like, roping people into doing it.
I watched this movie in rapid succession with scanners, and I was like, I think I want to fuck Michael Ironside. Like, I think I want to fuck Michael Ironside for real.
He was hot at that time, like, between that and scanners. He was kind of hot.
I just got, like, an... Yeah. Anyway.
Daddy vibes. Dean Norris from Breaking Bad as a commanding officer in it. Like, this cast is stacked. It's so funny. I forgot about all of the, like, propaganda and the way in which it feels
the literal
very
advertisements
much...
that he makes that are just fucking propaganda. Ugh.
It feels like a movie that is of this time period that we're living in right now, where it's like we're getting scenes of carnage, but it is being portrayed as, like, good things when there's, like, bodies of soldiers strewn about, destroyed by these insects. Like, it is really a hilarious movie that lampoons, it's a farce that lampoons the idea of militaristic movies in a lot of ways, and the way in which they are often presented as propaganda. And I just, boy,
Terry, it was such a good time. But, like, what are you talking about? Verhoeven doesn't fucking say that. Like, why would you say that it's sat? Like, it's not satirical.
He's deadly serious.
Everybody, serious. I'm joking. If you cannot watch the video, there were people online.
Yeah.
This is, I think, the cycle. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Helldivers 2 came out. It's literally Starship Troopers, the video game. Like, it is. People online are like, oh, yeah, it's like Starship Troopers. It's like making fun of stuff. And people are like, no, Starship Troopers was not making fun of anything. It was a very serious movie. And I was like,
we talk about media literacy a lot, but that's
deeply disturbing. It's almost as bad as the take I saw today that called Poor Things misogynistic and a rape fantasy.
Okay, I've seen people talk about that too, and I'm just like, ugh, I can't with you right now. You
were
totally misunderstanding.
Like, I just need you to have critical thinking skills for just two seconds. Anyway.
Well, the conversation about this movie and Helldivers 2 reminds me of a conversation that I see a lot with the Warhammer franchise, because the Warhammer franchise is also set in a future where they're one of the heroes, and I'm using that in quotations, is like a fascist organization, and people seem to, like, take it as if, like, it's a good thing. And so, like, the idea of people playing Warhammer and not understanding the satire and the farce of it is both deeply hilarious to me, but also deeply concerning as someone who plays those games.
It's like, not like they make it so obvious too, especially in the games. Like, it's
I don't get it. And I don't get. And so that's why I was like, I'm going to rewatch Starship Troopers, because everyone's talking about how it's not a farce. And I'm like, no, it is a farce, but I haven't seen it in like 20 odd years. So let's just throw that on and give it a try. And boy, was I cackling.
Yeah. I watched it for the first time during the the height of the pandemic, like when we couldn't, like when we weren't leaving our houses. And I was like, this is the best movie. I fucking love Paul Verhoeven. I love Paul Verhoeven.
Yeah,
if y'all need to, he's really good. I need to rewatch that movie just because I love that movie. It's a good movie. And it's brutal, too. Like, yeah. Even though it's funny, like, it's also incredibly brutal. And that's what, and again, that's Paul Verhoeven. That's Paul Verhoeven. He, like, dark, fucked up, funny, and you're like, what is going on? He's a twisted little shit, and I love it.
Awesome. So that's Starship Troopers. Go watch it, y'all, and realize how much of a farce it is.
Please, please, for the love of God, I beg of you, please.
Late Nights with Satan himself.
Okay, so I can talk about this because everyone has seen it. It's technically coming out March 22nd on Shudder, but this is Late Night with the Devil.
I need to see this movie so bad.
I knew I would love it, but I really loved it. David Desmalchian is finally in a starring role, and he is incredible. David Desmalchian has been seen in films such as The Boogeyman. He was the guy who brought the titular boogeyman to the house. He was in Last Voyage of Demeter. He was like the ship hand with the Russian accent, question mark?
Yeah, I think so.
Polka Dot Man in the Suicide Squad movie. He's been in everything. Like, he's one of those really awesome, like, bit players, but he's made a really good name for himself in the horror genre.
Yes,
and now he is finally in the leading role. This is directed by Colin and Cameron Carnes, Australian brothers. And this film is essentially, like, it's hybrid found footage, essentially. So that part of it, it's framed as, like, a pseudo-documentary about Jack Delroy, a late-night TV host from the 70s. And what happened one fateful night on a broadcast. And so it's framed like that. Like, you know something bad is going to happen, but you have no fucking idea what is going to happen. And you don't. And then there's a mix of the footage of them, like, filming the show versus behind the scenes stuff. So there's a really interesting, like, tension between polished. It's interesting because the polished filmmaking is the stuff that looks like it's the found footage looking stuff that is a recording of the show. So it has that, like, analog feeling, but that's the more polished performance. And then when they go behind the scenes, when the cameras are off and they're not live, we go to the more narrative kind of traditional way of filmmaking. So it's a really interesting hybrid of the two techniques to create a really interesting story about fame and desire and possession of. It's really, and it's like, it's about Jack Delroy, but it's also a really interesting kind of look at, like, digital possession, like an early look at digital possession. And it's really creepy and gross and weird, and it's more of a mindfuck than I expected, and I just really loved it. Like,
I need to see it so bad.
I've already seen quite a few movies this year that I'm like, fuck, there's so much good shit, my dudes. Like, I'm so happy. So I'm really stoked for that to be out March 22nd. I know I'm talking about it early, but I need to talk about it.
It's going to appeal to, like, so many different people. Joel Anderson, who made Lake Mungo, executive produced it because he's friends with the guys who directed it. So, like, he was I did an interview for this today, which is why, like, it's on my brain. But, like, he was on set the whole time and, like, helped them with the, like, I don't know. It's just real cool that, like, Joel Anderson, who did Lake Mungo.
I'm on the pod.
I just want to be like, hi, hello, you have shaped my career. That's a weird thing to tell you, but it's important that you know this as a person. But yeah, so everyone should check it out. It's just, the hype is real. The end.
I can't wait. I must see this movie. I cannot wait.
Yeah. And David Desmalchian is such a good actor, and he's the nicest man. And he's just a little cinnamon roll. And I only wish him the best. And that's it. On that note, burning down the world for love! What's this?
Okay, so I've apparently been in a video game mood, right? So I started playing, and I'm not done with it yet, but I've been playing Banishers, Ghosts of New Eden.
Oh, yeah, sad ghost video game.
Which is the new game by Don't Nod Studios, who were the creators of Life is Strange and Vampire and Life is Strange 2 and Tell Me Why. So this is like a third-person action game that takes cues from, I would say, like the new God of War games, as well as maybe a little bit of The Witcher, maybe Witcher 3. And it is about a couple, Antea Duarte and Red McGraith, and they are lovers, and they are the titular banishers, which are these kind of exorcists that go around this ancient time. I believe, even though it's set in New Eden, I believe it's sort of like set in the Americas at like the 1700s-ish. And it is, so they are banishers, and they go to places that where people are haunted by a ghost. Because in this world, ghosts who stay on attach themselves to people, and whether they are good or evil, they are draining the essence out of them. And so it is the banishers' goal to ascend the ghosts to the afterlife, so to speak, or banish them to hell, I guess, in this world. And so they've come to New Eden to help one of their friends with this possession case, find out that the friend is dead, and they end up fighting this demonic creature that ends up killing Antea Duarte, and she turns into a ghost and is attached to Red McGraith. And so you play through the game as him, and you can switch to her as well to sort of experience the world from the spirit realm. Some enemies require you to switch between the two of them for fighting. And you are given sort of like a choice. There is this dark magic that you can do to potentially bring her back to life. And you can do that, which requires you to basically sacrifice humans and take their essence for her. Or you can either banish or ascend the ghosts that are haunting. And you basically take on these variety of ghost stories and investigate why they're being haunted and figure out who's like the bad guy in the whole thing. And then make a decision. I think the idea that we're tying... Exactly. This game is basically, if you play The Witcher 3 and you remember the Red Baron storyline, that is like the one story that everyone talks about, where like you're investigating a haunting possession and involving a baron, and you learn like the history. It is basically that, the game. Every single story is about as involved as that, and heartbreaking as that. And
that's
so,
actually... You might have just sold me. That's like the first thing I've heard about this game that makes me actually really want to play.
Yeah, it is basically that.
I haven't watched a lot about it, like, to be perfectly honest.
I mean, I don't think a lot of people know about this one, which is why I want to talk about it. I haven't finished it yet, and I do think there's some... I don't know. I don't like the fact that we're kind of gamifying whether we should be forgiving the blaming the person or blaming the ghosts, because the story plays out like... If you want to play it out like you want to make a good decision or a bad decision, you can. But if you are focused on bringing Antea back to life, which I am, you just have to keep blaming all the humans regardless, because you have to have a certain number of dead humans to feed her essence to bring her back to life. So, like, the fact that we're gamifying that as well as tying into the story kind of cheapens it in a way for me that I don't particularly like. But the stories are very interesting. One of the very first ones, so this is a little bit of a spoiler, but it's one of the very first hauntings. You come across this man who is lost in the wilderness. And the place of New Eden has been like attacked by storms and fog. And he has been lost in the wilderness for an untold amount of time. He is starving. He has been eating leather. He wants you to help find his friend who... The game doesn't really say, but there's like hints of maybe love between the two men. And you sort of are following his story, and you find out that he actually killed the guy. And not only that, he's been eating him. And so, like, that is one of the very early results of finding out that this man who loved this other guy ended up killing him and has been eating him to stay alive because he can't get out of the wilderness. And so that is like one of the tip of the iceberg type of stories, but they're all, they deal with race. They deal with, this is the time of slavery. So they deal with that idea. Interestingly enough, Red McGrath and Antea is a white, he's a Scottish man and she is black. So like we already have this, this conversation of race happening between the two of them, where when you go to the very first village, when she's alive, they think that she's his servant, where it's the other way around. He is learning from her and she is the master banisher. So it deals with race, it deals with gender, and it deals with power, both in terms of colonialism and like dealing with a land that is being invaded by another country, as well as dealing with concepts of love and what it means to actually be haunted. So there's a lot of interesting things going on here. And it's a fun game. I think it's kind of punching above its weight class. So it's trying really hard to be like a AAA game, but it's not, doesn't quite hit that mark, but it's a really good, interesting story. It's fun to play. I really am digging it.
Oh, good. Cool.
And not a lot of people are talking about it, so I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, I've seen some, but I thought there would be more. I guess I thought this was a bigger release than it actually is, but...
Yeah, I thought it would hit bigger. But
people...
Yeah, I recommend it.
Is it the romance? Are people weird about that?
I don't know. Because who knows?
Because he's a person of color and people are terrible? Like, I don't know. I just
hate Gamers it. Are weird.
Who put this out?
It was released by Focus, but it was developed by Don't Nod, who did the Life is Strange.
Okay. See, that's the thing. Life is Strange had, like, such a big fan base. So does Vampire, doesn't it?
Yeah. A decent one, yeah. The reason why they made this is because of the success of Vampire.
That's so interesting. It's a weird time right now, too, though. I feel like there's so really much stuff coming out right now and, like, so much news coming out. I don't know.
Well, and they even... postponed it because it was supposed to release last October, but last October was lousy with games, so they tried to push it to a time. I think they're trying to beat like Final Fantasy coming out and all these other games, so like they're trying to find a good window for this relatively small game. And it sucks, but it's a good game. I really would recommend giving it a try.
Okay, I will.
Please do.
Cool. All right. That about does it for this week's Little Cuts. But, Terry, who are we talking to on Monday?
So we are chatting with Monday. Anthony Cousins. He's the director of Frogman, the movie that Mary Beth has been championing ever since she saw it at, what, Popcorn? Popcorn?
Popcorn Frights.
Popcorn Frights. And so we talk about cryptids and found footage and... sexy monsters. I don't know. And then we revisit a movie that we haven't, that was like our ninth episode, I want to say.
I'm sorry. Sexy monsters. I don't know. Anyway, I just said, I love you. It's amazing.
And he brought with him Dark Crystal. So we are revisiting Dark Crystal.
It's
the movie that we talked with
funny
Andreas and Eric Power about back in.
Oops, sorry. You froze, so I wasn't sure. And I wasn't sure if you were just waiting for me to say something. So I got talking. Sorry. Sorry.
You're going to have fun editing that one.
I know. This is going to be really funny. This is going to be a trip.
But yeah, so that is who we're talking with Monday. But as we sort of teed off. Initially, we are going to be also doing a series on my favorite 30 Rock episode. So which ones are we doing in the next Little Cuts, okay. Mary Beth?
So I'm very excited because I've seen some 30 Rock, but I've not watched a lot of it. And I like don't get, as you saw at the beginning of this episode, I don't catch the references. I know Werewolf Bar Mitzvah because, of course, I know Werewolf
Bar Mitzvah. Spooky, scary. Boys becoming men. Men becoming wolves.
Like, how... I have to know about that. And then I also know the episode where she gets, like, a really good sandwich, because I identify with that plotline so deeply about Sandwich Day. So that's, like, my baseline we have going on here. And I know you quote it all the time, and so I'm very excited because we are starting with Season 1, Episode 7, Terry. Tracy Does Conan.
Yep.
And then Season 1, Episode 12, Black Tie. These are all on Peacock?
It's on Peacock. It's on Hulu. I think it's on both of them.
Okay, cool.
And these are, honestly, we're starting with my favorites. These are literally the episodes that I have watched more than probably any other one. These are quintessential 30 Rock, where 30 Rock finally hits its groove. After like the first six episodes where it's trying to be a little serious in a humorous way. And it just sort of like, okay, I think we're going to get canceled. Let's just go for broke is how it feels. So I cannot wait. I'm so excited for this.
Yes.
I'm so excited. Oh,
so we are doing two episodes per little cuts because they're 20 minutes. Like, it's easy. I'm very excited to watch comedies that are not reality television.
Yes.
I'm also fascinated to see how this has aged. I am incredibly fascinated to see how this has aged.
I'm gonna say there is a couple episodes where it's like that are still some of my favorites, but like watching it now, it's like, so
I feel the same way with The Office and Parks and Rec when I used to. Well, I don't really watch Parks and Rec. I don't really rewatch that anymore. But yeah, but oh boy, can't wait.
I'm very excited to have a discussion about it.
I know. I'm gonna just probably start like watching all of it. I'm just gonna like watch all of the episodes. Anyway, so listeners, you've heard from us. We want to hear from you. What 30 Rock episodes are you excited for us to talk about? Like, I'm curious if your favorites are the same as Terry's. So let me know. Help this novice guide her through the world of 30 Rock. Send us an email at scarredforlifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on social media. I am at mbmcandrews on Twitter and at mb.mcandrews on Instagram.
And I'm at Gaily Dreadful everywhere.
And of course, follow the damn podcast on social media. We are at Scarred Podcast on Blue Sky and Twitter, and at Scarred for Life Podcast on Instagram.
And please don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe. And if you want to help support us, we are on Patreon. This month's episode was for Fresh Wounds. It was a little late, but it was very worth it. We talked about ills/them, and I didn't think we were going to have a lot to say, but boy, did we have a lot to say.
We had a lot to say. For a movie that's an hour and 13 minutes long and we spoke for 90 minutes. Yeah. I agree. Thank you, Derek Power, for our artwork. Thank you to Sean Keller for our music. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please stay safe out there. But most importantly, stay creepy.
And until next time.